let me explain something to you and the rest of the WWE Universe. See, Cena might have got the 1-2-3 tonight, but he talking about 20 days to WrestleMania. He might not make it if Pancake Patterson get a hold of him. You know why they call it. Y'all know why they call me Pancake, right?
No, but tell them why they call you Pancake.
Because I flatten spoons. That's what I do.
You are listening to the Solid Monster Sounds Off here on SEScoops.com. It is episode 266 for Sunday, March 24th, 2013. I am the Solid Monster. It was actually on this date 22 years ago today, WWE held WrestleMania 7 from the LA Sports Arena. And speaking of WrestleMania 7, that dovetails nicely into my plug here from my latest LayfieldReport.com column, which went up yesterday. The 10 greatest WrestleMania matches you never saw. We had the news recently of Dana White, president of the UFC, revealing that a couple years ago, Vince McMahon had pitched the idea of a fight between Vince and Dana to take place either at a UFC event or a WrestleMania. That would have been WrestleMania 27 in Atlanta. It would have been a co-main event. Vince McMahon against Dana White and The Undertaker facing Brock Lesnar. Remember, there was a lot of rumors at the time. Undertaker popped up at that UFC event, had a little stare down with Brock. And Dana did not allow him to fight, nor did Dana have any interest in accepting a fight with Vince. So it never happened. And there's actually been a whole bunch of matches that could have happened, that were planned to happen in some cases, that were scheduled, but never did at WrestleMania. There's way more than 10, but these are 10 of the more prominent ones. And you can go check that out right now. It's up on LayfieldReport.com. Leave some love. Let me know what you think. Of the matches on that list, I can tell you, Shawn Michaels and Eddie Guerrero, WrestleMania 22. That's a match I would have loved to have seen. Hulk Hogan and Steve Austin. There were two different WrestleManias where that match could have taken place, and the idea was either pitched or it was planned, and Steve Austin just had no interest in doing it. So I'm curious to find out which matches on that list you would have preferred to see at WrestleMania. Of course, Undertaker and Sting. We remember the whole mass hysteria over that a few years ago, which was not the original plan, although WWE did in fact reach out to Sting, whose contract had just expired with TNA, and Sting talked about this and how WWE made him an offer and he turned him down. He's never had any trust in Vince McMahon and his handling of a lot of those old WCW guys that came over. I mean, you look at the way some of them were booked after the Invasion. And I can understand where Sting is coming from. I personally think Sting dropped the ball. I think he made a big mistake by not coming over, getting the Hall of Fame induction, doing the WrestleMania match. But whatever makes you happy, I guess. Also, my next Walking Dead recap will be up at the end of this weekend or by early Monday morning. There's only two episodes left of The Walking Dead this season. I've enjoyed doing the recaps for Layfield Report. Only two more left to go. So please, if you are a fan of the show, be sure to check that out. Want to run down the WrestleMania 29 card here as it stands. WrestleMania now is only 2 weeks away, believe it or not. Emanating from MetLife Stadium in nearby East Rutherford, New Jersey, the event is sold out. First WrestleMania to be sold out this far in advance in many, many years. I'm sure they'll open up some seats as we get closer to the date of the event, but they're packed in there. It's going to be end up being probably the biggest gate in WrestleMania history. They're going to make a whole boatload of money off this show, regardless of what you think of the build-up so far and some of the matches. But I will say the build-up to this WrestleMania has been very disappointing. I think it's just been completely lacking. I don't have the same level of excitement that I did going into WrestleMania last year. I'm looking forward to going, and I'm sure it'll overall be a good show. There may be some matches that disappoint. There may be some matches that exceed expectations. I guess we'll find out. But here's the lineup as it stands right now. We have WWE Champion The Rock. If he shows up, no, he'll be there. The Rock will be defending against John Cena in the main event, twice in a lifetime. No holds barred, Triple H one-on-one with Brock Lesnar, and Triple H's career will be on the line. And if you're asking yourself, why should we be excited about a match where someone's career is on the line and the person only wrestles maybe twice a year? That's a good question. I don't have an answer for you. CM Punk one-on-one against The Undertaker, the battle over the urn, and The Undertaker's streak on the line. Alberto Del Rio defends the World Heavyweight Championship against Jack Swagger. Hell No, Kane and Daniel Bryan put the tag team titles on the line against Big E Langston and Dolph Ziggler. There will be a six-man tag on the show, The Shield, Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose against Randy Orton, Sheamus, and The Big Show. I didn't catch SmackDown on Friday. I read the results. If it's not official yet with Big Show, it will be. Mark Henry one-on-one with Ryback. Chris Jericho and Fandango is rumored at this point. I know Fandango did have a little deal backstage on Raw with Jericho. He attacked Jericho on SmackDown, cost him his match against Jack Swagger, so that match is all but official. And two other rumored matches not yet announced. Wade Barrett against The Miz for the Intercontinental Championship is being talked about. Antonio Cesaro, one-on-one, possibly with R-Truth for the United States Championship. The Divas right now have no match on this show. I know there's been reports of them trying to bring back some old Divas like Maryse and Kelly Kelly. They've been turned down by a lot of Divas so far. They wanted to do some sort of tag match with the current crop of Divas against the old Divas. Old, for lack of a better term. They're not exactly old, but doesn't look like that match is going to happen. Perhaps they'll do something where Caitlyn defends the Divas title against Layla or somebody else, but right now there's no women's match on WrestleMania, and quite frankly, it makes sense. I mean, the way they treat the Divas division, I can't remember the last time there was a Divas match on Raw. I know they've had some tag matches on SmackDown, but Raw's the A show, and I honestly could not even tell you the last time. I don't know if they've had a Divas match on Raw the entire month of March. I mean, that's how bad it's gotten. So why even bother putting them on the WrestleMania card? I mean, I'm sure they want the payday, but it's almost a waste of space. You've got so many matches already lined up. You know, it just feels like a waste of time to me. But like I was saying before, this WrestleMania card here leaves a lot to be desired. Just very, very haphazardly the way they put together this undercard. The main event, John Cena and The Rock. I don't know if it's the fact that it's a rematch of a match we already saw. I don't know if it has more to do with the fact that The Rock just isn't on TV that much. He should be back on Raw this Monday night, but he's missed the last 2 weeks. And speaking of The Rock, he had two segments on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. He was on The Tonight Show this past week. I think it was Thursday night. I don't remember. Apparently, he got two segments on the show. Not one mention of WrestleMania. Not one mention of WWE. You know, he didn't have the belt with him. That bothers me less. I don't really care about that so much. It would be nice. You know, he's had the title with him on the red carpet, which blew my mind, because I really didn't think he would bring that title along with him and show it off. But, you know, he was on the red carpet in other countries for some movie premieres. He had the championship on his shoulder. He was holding it up. It doesn't bother me, when he doesn't have the belt on TV talk shows like this, just because there are champions on the WWE roster, current active full-time guys who do shows like this, who don't bring the belts with them either, you know? So that's fine. What I do find rather odd is, again, you've got two segments on the show, and you're 2 weeks away from defending your championship at, you know, this huge pay-per-view. You're going to have 70,000 people in this big stadium, and you don't even plug the date, let alone talk about it. I mean, even if the movie studio is the one to set up the interview, and I think they probably were in this case, this was not something obviously WWE set up, even if the movie studio was the one to set it up, I find it hard to believe that Rock can't get a plug-in for the match. I mean, there really is no defense of it that I could think of. I'm sure there'll be people backstage tomorrow night at Raw crowing about it. Probably the same people who were bitching and moaning last year about The Rock taking up a space on the WrestleMania card, which I defended him against and continue to, because I think it's better for them to have The Rock under contract doing this than not. I think it's insane to think that they would be better off without him. But in this case, I just find this very, very bizarre, because one of the ideas in putting the title on him in the first place was, as he does promotion for his movies and he goes out there and does shows like this, he can either have the belt with him or talk about the fact that, hey, I'm the WWE champion, I'm back, I'm wrestling, I'm doing both at the same time, I've got this big pay-per-view coming up, me and John Cena at WrestleMania, we did record business last year, we're going to do it again this year, and that just does not seem to be happening. But, you know, they've got 2 weeks left to promote this match. Rock will be back on TV this week and next week. I don't know what they're going to do. I, you know, rock concerts and rap concerts, we don't need that bullshit. They need to just get down to business. You know, they had that great segment early in the month where Rock cut a promo on Cena, Cena cut a promo on Rock. That was really, really intense and really, really great. And my fear is that perhaps by doing that so early, they may have peaked. You know, because what's left? I mean, you can send them both out there to do another promo like that, but we've already seen it. So I'm not really sure what they're going to do. I guess we'll find out. They got 2 weeks left to promote this match and get people excited about it. And we'll see what they do. But I'm very uninspired by this WrestleMania card. And the build has not been good as compared to recent years. The other thing also to keep in mind here, the weather in New York and New Jersey has sucked this entire week. In fact, it sucked the last couple of weeks. It's been cold. It's been snowy. It's been rainy. In fact, tomorrow they're expecting another snowstorm here in New York. I don't think it's going to be too severe, but more snow here as spring is upon us now. It was like 25 degrees outside. I was freezing my nuts off the other day. Could make for an interesting WrestleMania if the weather doesn't improve. We've got 2 weeks. I would hope it would warm up, but for those of us poor saps who paid a lot of money to sit in that stadium for WrestleMania who are not used to going to football games, I know in football it's normal to go and be out in the cold, and I think people are nuts who do that. I hope the weather improves. That's all I got to say. I mean, the ring will be protected if there's any rain or snow. You do worry if there's a lot of wind, because then all of a sudden, if it's snowing and raining, the wind blows it sideways, and that could be a problem. But the action in the ring will be fine. It's everybody else in the stadium who I think has to worry. So, yeah, hopefully it warms up a little bit here. Raw from this past Monday night, emanating from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. No Bruno Sammartino. They're saving him for the Hall of Fame at Madison Square Garden, as they should. Not a very good show on Monday night at all. They had another 15-minute overrun at the end, which fell flat with the live crowd. People did not care at all when Paul Heyman announced the stipulations for the Brock Triple H match at WrestleMania. You could hear a pin drop in the arena. And it's not because they were stunned, like, oh my God, Triple H's career is on the line. It was more like, oh, his career is on the line. Yay. Like, they didn't really give much of a hoot about the stip. And I can't say I blame him. I thought it was kind of underwhelming. Like I said, probably hard to get into a retirement stipulation when the guy whose career is on the line only wrestles twice a year and he's going to own the company. People know he works behind the scenes. They didn't indicate that it was his COO position that was on the line. As far as I know, it's his wrestling career. And really, who cares? He's semi-retired already anyway. At least they were smart enough on this show not to have Lesnar out there for the contract signing portion. I think we all remember the last contract signing that Brock was part of. And he did not have Paul Heyman do the talking for him. What a disaster that was. Remember he was making all the contract demands with John Laurinaitis. That was just a horrendous segment. So thankfully they avoided that this time. Brock did come out towards the end. Came out on stage after Heyman got assaulted by Triple H. He was wielding a steel chair. He was smashing it repeatedly on the ground. I never thought I would see anything scarier than the sight of Brock Lesnar. And then I saw Brock Lesnar on the show with a steel chair. So I stand corrected. They had a tout segment also where one fan suggested Iron Man match as the stipulation for Triple H versus Lesnar. Never allow that man on television ever again. Doesn't he know he shouldn't be giving them ideas like that? Triple H is 43 years old. I don't need to see him in an Iron Man match. And he's had, you know, Triple H had a great Iron Man match, I thought, with The Rock back in 2000, 13 years ago. Brock Lesnar had a great one with Kurt Angle 10 years ago. Okay, these men should not be in a 60-minute match. The entire first hour of this show was a complete waste of time. Just one pointless segment and squash match after another. It opened with the primetime players interrupting a John Cena promo. Titus O'Neil was dressed in a wig, calling himself Rufus Pancake Patterson, who you may have heard at the beginning of the Sound Off here this week. I have no idea what this was about. I have no idea who he was supposed to be impersonating. Maybe it's an original character. I have absolutely no idea, but I did think it was pretty entertaining. Pointless, but entertaining. The best part of the whole bit was seeing white Cena and black Cena on screen together at the same time. It was like galaxies colliding. You know, it's like in Ghostbusters, they say don't cross the streams or else bad things will happen. I always felt like if we had white Cena and black Cena on screen at once, bad things would happen. We're like in Back to the Future when Dr. Brown says, listen, you got to be careful. You can't see your old self. Thankfully, the universe is okay. They talked about Darren Young being on a box of Cocoa Pebbles as opposed to Fruity Pebbles, which I thought was kind of clever. You look at the rest of the first hour here. You know, John Cena, by the way, did beat Darren Young in a quick squash. Ryback squashed David Otunga, who now can claim to be in the most successful WWE Films movie of all time. More than John Cena, more than Triple H, more than all of them. Think about what that says. They teased a Fandango versus Great Khali match, which thankfully never took place. R-Truth beat Damian Sandow when Sandow just walked out just walked out on the mat. It feels to me like they do that finish way too often with the heels on WWE TV. And as bad as this first hour was going, we did not need to see a walk-out, count-out finish to this match. I mean, this first hour sucked. There's just no other way to put it. Undertaker came out. He cut a promo on CM Punk. He said Punk had one chance left to save his soul and return the urn. They showed Punk backstage on the Titantron. He was mimicking Paul Bearer's voice. He was playing catch with the urn like it was a basketball. Then he dropped it on purpose. He let off an S-bomb, which got bleeped out. Nobody cared about this. And why should they? I mean, this is the best they could come up with for this feud. I would have preferred that they just stuck with the whole respect angle. At least that would have been something. By the way, speaking of Paul Bearer, I may as well mention this here. The official cause of death for Paul Bearer has been released. TMZ had a story up. They spoke with his son, Michael. Paul Bearer died of a heart attack, essentially. Something called SVT, a dangerously high heart rate. And apparently it's a common condition that if treated, usually you're okay. You know, this whole thing was preventable. But unfortunately, some of the symptoms, it could feel like heartburn. It could feel like stuff that most people probably wouldn't think to go to the doctor for. And apparently he waited far too long before he checked himself into a hospital, and he died. So, I mean, that makes it even worse, knowing that it was something that was preventable. But that is the official cause of death for Paul Bearer. Alberto Del Rio beat Cody Rhodes in a long match on Raw. Crowd chanted USA repeatedly, which I'm sure is exactly the kind of reaction they were looking for. Jack Swagger brawled with Del Rio after the match. Swagger ended up breaking the ankle of Ricardo Rodriguez, who did a hell of a job selling the injury here. I will give him that. Ricardo was quite great. I still don't care about this match at all. I just don't. I can't get into it. Swagger shouldn't even be in this match. We've been down that road before. Zeb Coulter, I think, is fine in his role. I think he does a very good job as Swagger's mouthpiece. That's the best thing I can say about it. It's good to see Swagger getting a push, even though he fucked up. I just can't get into this match. I don't know if they can do anything to get me into this match. Maybe I'm just not into the whole storyline. But this was pretty boring. Randy Orton and Sheamus beat 3MB. Shield came out, and before they could get in the ring, Big Show sprinted down to the ring to chase them off. He pointed up at the goddamn WrestleMania sign, which I hate. I guess that means he wants to be on their team. Either that or he wants to eat the WrestleMania sign. I don't know. It's one or the other. Dolph Ziggler got yet another win, this time over Kofi Kingston. Dude's on a win streak, finally. Remember when Dolph Ziggler beat John Cena in the main event of that pay-per-view? Yeah, me neither. And I was at that show. What a waste. Kane and Daniel Bryan came out after the match. They challenged Dolph and Big E to a match at WrestleMania. Dolph seemed hesitant, probably because he was thinking to himself, I don't want to be relegated to a tag team match at WrestleMania, but that's too bad. Big E and AJ accepted for him, so the match is on. It's very odd to me to see them debuting not one, but two, I presume, guys at WrestleMania. Assuming Fandango does wrestle Chris Jericho, it'll be Fandango's first match. Because from the looks of it, he ain't gonna wrestle on TV until WrestleMania. They're just going to keep doing this whole gimmick where he teases wrestling and then he doesn't. And then Big E Langston apparently is going to be making his in-ring debut at WrestleMania as well. So sink or swim for those two guys. Let's see if they can handle the pressure. I don't even know where to begin with Kofi Kingston. I'm not sure where you fit him into the WrestleMania picture. Probably just whatever pre-show match or dark match they do for the live crowd. You know, it's a shame, really, because Kingston is a talented guy. You know, I pitched the idea a long time ago here on the Sound Off. In fact, it may have been years ago at this point. I couldn't even tell you what episode it was, but I pitched the idea of turning Kofi Kingston heel. You cut the dreadlocks, you put him in a suit and tie. Normally, I would say taking a guy with a unique look like he has and cutting his hair and putting him in a suit just makes him like everybody else and makes him very vanilla or chocolate in this case, I guess you would say. Is that the right phrase for it? Anyway, point is, he's on the fast track to nowhere right now, so I think it would be a welcome change. I don't think he's really got anything to lose. You know, he impressed me with his promo skills. If you remember during that little feud with Randy Orton back in 2009, I think putting him in a suit and having him heel it up a little bit on the mic would be a welcome change. And you know what the other benefit is to turning him heel? It gives him a whole bunch of fresh opponents to work with. I mean, I, for one, would not mind seeing a babyface Chris Jericho against a heel Kofi Kingston. I mean, at least consider it. Consider turning the guy. He's too talented to be wasted like this. They aired the same John Cena promo package for WrestleMania they did last week since The Rock was off the show. It's a very good video. And one thing I noticed here, and I tweeted this out when I was live blogging during Raw, it's interesting to see in this video and hear John Cena talking about how he has to win the title from The Rock. I have to win the championship. And it reminded me a lot of the WrestleMania 17 build-up between Steve Austin and The Rock. If you recall what Austin said, the only reason I remember this is because, much as they did here for this match, they put together a really cool promo package for that Austin-Rock match at X7 that I still remember to this day. And if you recall, one of the things Austin said, this was during a sit-down locker room interview that Jim Ross conducted with Rock and Austin, which I don't think they do enough of. They should do more of these types of interviews. Austin said, "I need to beat you, Rock. I need to more than anything you could ever imagine." And in fact, at WrestleMania that year, Steve Austin did what he had to do to win the championship, which is align himself with Vince McMahon and essentially turn heel, beat The Rock up with a bunch of chair shots, and he won the belt. And it just makes me wonder, you know, the likelihood, and I get questions about this all the time. I hate to bring this up myself because I'm just opening up a whole can of worms here. I don't really think they're going to do this, and I do think it's probably foolish given how important John Cena is to them and how badly they've done, I think, a job of building up other big baby faces. I mean, they've got Ryback. Ryback's cooled off quite a bit. Punk's a heel now. Punk, you know, was their second biggest baby face. Now he's not. Guys like Triple H and Undertaker and The Rock, they're not full-time. They're not going to be around. I don't know. I mean, the de facto number two babyface may well be Ryback. I mean, Randy Orton has just, he's fallen down a couple of notches. I mean, would it be Sheamus? I don't really think that says much if Sheamus is the number two babyface in the promotion. So, again, all of that having been said, it makes me think. You've got The Rock, who apparently is staying at least a little bit beyond WrestleMania. I don't know if he's wrestling on the April pay-per-view, but he is booked, supposedly, for the Extreme Rules pay-per-view in May. So The Rock is going to stick around. The Rock is not just going to vanish for another year. Is it out of the realm of possibility that because everybody assumes John Cena is getting his win back, right? John Cena is going to win the championship. It's so predictable. And WWE oftentimes likes to avoid being predictable. If they think somebody knows what's going to happen, they'll swerve them for the sake of swerving them. Is it out of the realm of possibility to consider the idea that perhaps The Rock could actually win at WrestleMania and John Cena snaps after the loss and attacks The Rock and basically begins the long-anticipated John Cena heel turn? Again, do I think it's going to happen? Probably not. In fact, I'm almost certain it won't. But I could not help but hear that promo and just the similarities just in how they're building this match. You know, John Cena had a very, very poor year last year. 2012 was probably the worst year of his life, if you believe what he says in these promos. And Steve Austin, well, you know, the year before he beat The Rock at WrestleMania wasn't exactly his best year either. In fact, he missed most of it because he was recovering from spinal fusion surgery. So not one of Steve Austin's finest years. And for Austin, it was a story of redemption. He was looking to come back and become the top dog again and win back the championship. And he told The Rock flat out, "I have to beat you. I have no choice but to beat you." And that seems to be the story they're telling here with John Cena. So I don't know if they're telegraphing the same thing. Look, they turned Austin heel at WrestleMania 17, and things did not work out too well for them. Steve Austin was one of the biggest stars, if not the biggest babyface they had. Even though I think at that point he wasn't getting quite the same reaction. He was getting a little stale. But they did the turn, and business started falling. You look at the ratings patterns. You look at the numbers don't lie. That was the end of the golden age for WWE, the beginning of the end. They still did very good business, but it was the beginning of the end. And I wonder if, perhaps some of what goes into the mindset here is, well, we don't want to repeat that. Because John Cena is the biggest star they have. You turn him heel, what happens to house show business? What happens to the merchandise business? What happens to TV ratings? You know, for TV ratings, if anything, I think the ratings may go up because people would be rather intrigued at the idea of a heel John Cena. But what about all the other business indicators? That's what they have to worry about. But I will say it was a thought that crossed my mind. And one person wrote into the show this week, and I'm going to mention his email here instead of the mailbag later. Ray wrote into the Sound Off, and he had a question. The question basically was, do you think that John Cena is at a point now in his career where he could potentially be the face of a new NWO-like faction? You know, obviously, he's the biggest babyface of this generation, much the way Hogan was in the 80s and Austin was in the late 90s. Ray says that Cena could really turn his career around. I don't understand him saying that. Cena's career is just fine. I don't think he needs to turn his career around. I just think it would be a welcome change for the character. But the point is, could he lead his own faction? And if so, who would I see by his side? And I know a lot of people are going to jump all over me for even suggesting this. And let me just say that, and I have a question, actually, that somebody asked me for the mailbag. I should probably wait for later on. Whether or not, you know, like the Shield, for example, needs to have a leader or like a main event guy be revealed as like the brains behind the operation. And I don't. I actually like the Shield as they are. But I am intrigued, as I think about this in my head, at the idea of a John Cena Shield alliance. You know, whether Cena leads the Shield or just kind of partners with them, however you want to put it. But I, you know, envision a situation where, like I just talked about, John Cena has to win the championship at WrestleMania. I get shades of what happened with Austin back in 01. And if you're looking for an unpredictable finish, I mean, I can't think of a better, more unpredictable finish than John Cena going heel to win the championship at WrestleMania. But in doing so, you know, towards the end of the match, the Shield comes out. You know, win or lose in their match earlier in the night, it really doesn't matter. Shield comes out, maybe there's a ref bump, comes out of the crowd. People are wondering, why is the Shield here? You know, who are they going to attack? They're going to attack Cena? Obviously, Cena's had some issues with the Shield before. Rock as well, back at the Royal Rumble. And shockingly enough, the Shield ends up attacking The Rock, perhaps leading to a John Cena win at WrestleMania and questions about what is the nature of the relationship between Cena and the Shield. Now, the only way that I can envision this working, because current babyface, smiley, happy-go-lucky John Cena and the Shield is sacrilege. I mean, the two should not be associated with each other in any way. But if they went full bore with a John Cena heel turn and he didn't come out smiling and smirking every week and he really went all the way with a heel turn, I don't know that I would necessarily mind it. The fact that, you know, we find out the Shield, in fact, part of the reason they've been able to run roughshod so easily in the company is because they've had this secret alliance with the biggest star in the company. And they you know, settle the biggest injustice of all, the fact that The Rock, this part-time guy, comes in, thinks he's the champion, thinks he runs the joint, and that's an injustice. And they righted that injustice by helping John Cena win the championship at WrestleMania. I mean, you could build that story if you wanted to. Honestly, I can't see John Cena starting his own faction with anybody else. Who would you put in it? Again, unless you turn the guy heel and associated him with the Shield, what are you going to do? You're going to put a faction together with Dolph Ziggler and Cody Rhodes? I mean, who's John Cena going to be partnered up with? It doesn't make any sense. So in that respect, I don't. The Shield thing could work if they play their cards right. I'm not advocating that. I'm just saying it's an intriguing idea that I thought of the other day. But anyway, that's my spiel on that. Main event on Raw Monday was actually a triple threat match for the Intercontinental Championship. Wade Barrett successfully defending against The Miz and Chris Jericho. This was a great match. Probably should have happened to WrestleMania, in all honesty. That way they could have condensed two matches in one by having Barrett, Jericho, and Miz all in one match, and Fandango is, you know, free to go Fandango fuck himself somewhere else. But Jericho's been on fire with these matches since coming back, which is probably good for Fandango if they are going to have a match, because being in there with Chris Jericho gives him the best chance of having a great, memorable match. And again, he's going to be wrestling for the first time on that show. He's got to make a great impression. I can't think of a better opponent for him than Jericho. But this was a great match. The other thing, last thing about Raw I want to mention here is Booker T was announced on this show as the latest name for the WWE Hall of Fame class of 2013. He joins the likes of Bruno Sammartino, Bob Backlund, Mick Foley, Trish Stratus, and Donald Trump for one of the strongest classes of inductees yet, maybe the strongest. I think 2004 might get the edge just because they inducted 11 people that year, which is a record. I guess they had a lot of catching up to do since they had not had a Hall of Fame induction since 1996. 2004 also had my all-time favorite Hall of Fame speech given by Bobby the Brain Heenan. That ending where he says he wishes Gorilla Monsoon were still there to see him inducted, that still gets me every time I see it. But this is a very impressive class, and I'm going to enjoy being there live to see it. I'm thinking they probably will add one more name before all is said and done. I've heard Kamala's name mentioned in some reports. I guess we'll know soon enough. But Booker is certainly a deserving candidate. You know, he came up as part of a tag team with his brother, Stevie Ray, who he had a personal falling out with many years ago. I know he has not, or at least until recently, he had not spoken with his brother in many, many years. Booker did say on Twitter that Stevie Ray would be there for the ceremony, so they must at least be on amicable terms now. Hopefully they patch things up. I don't know if Stevie Ray will be the one to induct him. They have not announced that, but as Harlem Heat, they got over as stars in WCW, and they won a record 10 tag team titles while they were there. Booker then got over as a singles competitor. I remember his Best of Seven series for the television title with Chris Benoit like it was yesterday. I mean, those were the matches in my mind that really helped solidify Booker T as a singles performer. It's a shame those matches are never going to see the light of day again. WWE, they tried to recreate the magic between Booker and Benoit by doing a Best of Seven series for the U.S. title back in 2005, but it was not nearly as good. You know, both guys were a lot older. They were a lot more beat up by that point. Booker became WCW champion for the first time in 2000. He held the world and U.S. titles, in fact, when he signed with WWE in 2001, and they did the Invasion storyline. He had two belts. He feuded with The Rock. He lost the WCW title to him, and then he briefly feuded with Stone Cold Steve Austin, which included my all-time favorite segment ever, ever, ever on SmackDown, the Supermarket Brawl, which is still fun to go back and watch even today. And then, of course, Booker T did the tag team thing with Goldust, which was very entertaining. He does have on his resume a world championship match at a WrestleMania. That would be WrestleMania 19 in Seattle, where he fought Triple H during Triple H's reign of terror as the champion. This is the match where Triple H buried Booker T 6 feet under. And, you know, that's a term that is often overused and misused by fans. You know, one person loses a match on TV these days, and oh my God, they're buried. That's not what it means. But if you look up the definition of the word buried in the wrestling dictionary, this is one match you would find near the top of that list. I mean, it still upsets me just thinking about it. First, to give you some perspective on this, to explain where I'm coming from on this, Booker T won a Battle Royal on Raw to become the number one contender for the World Heavyweight title. Okay, he eliminated The Rock to win the Battle Royal. The very next week, so that would have been March 3rd, 2003, okay? March 3rd episode of Raw in 03. I don't even have to look up the date because I know I'm right. I know this because I was at that show. It took place at the Nassau Coliseum. I actually remember walking to the arena from my dorm room, which was on the campus right next to the arena. It was freezing outside. I was sick as a dog. I had something like 103-degree fever. Absolutely no business I had being outside around other people. So sorry to anyone who I may have infected that night, but such is life. I remember it also because Stone Cold and The Rock had a face-off at the end of that show to build up their WrestleMania match. I just remember thinking how cool it was to see Austin and Rock in the ring together again. And this was in 2003. Okay, we were only a couple of years removed from the glory days of Rock versus Austin. People are still longing for those days today. And it's 10 years later, so think about that. But anyway, Booker T opened the show on that particular episode of Raw with a promo. And I remember he didn't even have very much to say. I mean, he started talking. I mean, maybe he talked for like 30 seconds or something. And almost immediately, he was interrupted by Triple H's music. And so out comes the champion, you know, Ric Flair at his side. And he proceeds to cut maybe the single greatest promo he's ever done to bury somebody on television. He tells Booker T, somebody like you doesn't get to be the world champion. Obviously playing the race card. As if it wasn't obvious enough they were playing the race card. He made a comment about Booker's nappy hair as well. He said, you're not a wrestler, you're an entertainer. You're here to make people like me laugh. And he said, you're going to do what you do best at WrestleMania. You're going to lose. He said Booker accomplished nothing by being the WCW champion because the WCW title was a joke. It meant nothing. It was held by guys like David Arquette and Vince Russo. All of which is true, by the way. I'm not denying that. But why the hell would you bring that up in a promo? You're trying to build this guy up for a WrestleMania main event. I never understood the burying of WCW after they bought the company out. They owned the name, the logos, the library, everything. I mean, it just made Booker out to be a total joke for no reason. And Booker just stood there and took it all. This is a wrestling problem, not a WWE problem to this day. They do it all the time. Why in the real world would the babyface just stand there and take that kind of verbal abuse without retaliating? It just makes the babyface look so weak. You know, especially when, like in this case, the bad guy just walks away laughing. This didn't end with Booker T attacking Triple H. You let Triple H walk away. So that brings us to WrestleMania. I'm giving you a little WrestleMania history lesson here. Now, supposedly, Booker T was scheduled to win the world title on that show. And you know what? As a storyline, that actually would make a lot of sense. If they were going to tear down Booker T the way they did and make him look inferior to Triple H and bring race into it and treat him like a second-class citizen, you could justify it if he ends up winning the championship. In the end, if the good guy comes out on top, then it's okay. Instead, he lost. Just like Triple H said he would. No rematch. One and done. Thanks for coming. And what angered me about the whole thing, it wasn't even the fact that he lost, okay? Forget that. It's how he lost. If you recall the end of that match, Booker T, he threw everything at Triple H. I mean, he even busted out the old Harlem Hangover. I thought he killed Triple H. He does that flip into a leg drop off the top rope. I thought he took the guy's head off. He threw everything at him. And out of nowhere, Triple H busts out a pedigree. Just one pedigree. Now, if he would have pedigreed Booker T and pinned him, fine. I still think that would have been kind of a weak finish. You know, even back then, everybody kicked out of everybody else's finisher at least once. But they didn't do that. Triple H hits the pedigree, and now both guys are down. Now, how many times have we seen this in a match? Guy hits a finishing move, but he's too weak. Can't capitalize. So both guys are laying there. Time passes. The guy crawls over. He puts an arm over him, or he hooks a leg, and the other guy kicks out a 2.5. How many times have we seen that? Probably hundreds. Thousands, maybe. But Triple H hits the pedigree. Both guys are down. And a long time passes. It felt like an eternity. I mean, it really did. I mean, it felt like you could have played out the rest of the WrestleMania card and then gone back to this match, and Triple H still would be in the middle of crawling over to cover Booker T. So finally he crawls over. He covered. I don't remember if he just put an arm over him, if he hooked the leg. I mean, it doesn't matter. I think he hooked the leg. And 1, 2, 3. No kick out. No drama. No nothing. He just beat him. In the absolute worst way that you could possibly beat somebody. He buried him. Like I said, no rematch. Just move on to the next feud. Kill the next guy. And it just, again, I think back to that, especially now, all these years later, and it's just, it's really eye-opening to see how that whole thing played out. I mean, you look at The Rock on that Raw where Booker T won the Battle Royal, okay? He tossed The Rock out of the ring. Rock is sitting on the floor on the outside. He can't believe that this guy just eliminated him from the Battle Royal. Booker T's in the ring. He's doing a spin-a-rooney. And The Rock, who is a heel at this time, mind you, a very entertaining one, but still, The Rock was a heel. This was the Hollywood Rock character. He's on the outside clapping for Booker T. And I'm not talking about a golf clap. He's applauding the man. He's looking at the fans at ringside. He's pointing at Booker in the ring. He's saying, he's pretty good. He's pretty good. That's all he did. That's all he had to do. In those 5 seconds, The Rock did more to put over Booker T than Triple H did during their entire program. And that right there tells the tale of Rock and Triple H, by the way, back in the day. Who was interested in helping other guys and who was interested in helping himself. Now that he's mostly retired and he's going to take over the company someday, that should be less of an issue. But back then, that was a different story. So, yeah. Now that I'm done ranting, Booker T is a well-deserving Hall of Fame candidate. Hopefully he'll avoid talking about WrestleMania 19 at the Hall of Fame because otherwise I may flip out and you may hear me in the background on the DVD release. Now I want to get to a story that I'm sure is going to stir up some controversy, but I'm going to talk about it anyway. And that is the situation with Bully Ray. In case you live under a rock, or you're not a TNA fan, which probably is a better explanation, so not everybody will know about this, but it was an incident that took place 2 weeks ago at the Impact tapings in Chicago at the Sears Center. Bully Ray, the TNA World Heavyweight Champion, was caught on video using multiple gay slurs while yelling at a fan during the tapings. This was... and by the way, that video is, or at least was, up on YouTube. I haven't checked in the last couple of days. It took place at the end of the first taping. What TNA is doing now is when they tape a live Impact on the road, they're taping two shows in one night. So Impact will air live 1 week. It'll be taped the next. So this was at the end of the first taping. And Aces and Eights were leaving through the crowd to go back to the backstage area. And Bully was jaw-jacking with some fans, which is fine. He's a heel. You know, I actually like to see him do more of this, as I talked about last week. He gets great heat. But that doesn't mean you have to walk up to a fan in the crowd, even if the fan did something to piss him off. And that wasn't the case here, because Bully has spoken with the fan. I think he might have actually had lunch with the fan since then. He admitted the fan did nothing wrong. He didn't lift a finger to him. The fan wasn't being obnoxious or anything like that. But even if he was, even if the fan did do something like that, it doesn't matter. There is no reason to call somebody by either of those words. I understand that back in the old ECW days, that was more widely accepted. And I saw many of those old ECW segments where he just brutalized people in the crowd. And he did plenty of things that I was totally fine with. Forget the racial crap. Okay, he went off on people, and I was fine with it in other cases. It's not 1998 anymore. It's 2013. Guess what? You can still call somebody a douchebag. You can still call somebody an asshole. Or insult the guy's mother. Say that she sleeps around. Whatever. There's plenty of derogatory things you can say to push the envelope and get heel heat without resorting to hate speech. And I know that some people, they use those words with their friends. You know, I've had friends before that just casually threw words like that out there. They don't necessarily use it as hate speech, but that doesn't make it any less dumb. And this excuse that, well, you know, 20 years ago it was okay. No, it wasn't. You had Jerry Lawler on Monday Night Raw calling Goldust a queer and a fag. Okay? That's what he called him. He used both of those words in separate promos back in 1997. And even then, it was taboo. I don't understand how in the age of smartphones and YouTube, how Bully could be so stupid. That's what I don't get. Out of all the words he could have used, he had to take the cheap route. It's just laziness. Monday night, Dixie Carter posted a message on Twitter. She said, "Heard Bully Ray made inappropriate comments to a fan in Chicago. This will not be tolerated. Sincere apologies on behalf of TNA." And Bully Ray followed with a statement of his own on Twitter, saying, "Made an inappropriate comment to a fan in Chicago. If anyone was offended by this, I do apologize. No harm was meant." And to his credit, Bully has been nothing but apologetic since then. He said it's his screw-up. He owns up to it. He takes full responsibility. And basically, he recognizes it was a pretty stupid thing to say. Now, was he forced into saying that? Yeah, probably. He was forced to apologize. But I'd also like to think that, you know, based on... He's been tweeting a lot about this, by the way, not just that first one. I would like to think that based on the tweets he exchanged with the fan, because they also exchanged messages online that all of us could see, I think he's being sincere. The fan, by the way, said he actually was not offended by what Bully said, which is fine. You know, good for them. They should consider themselves lucky, because if it was somebody else who was offended, this story would have been plastered all over TMZ. And if that happens, I could see them taking the title off Bully Ray if that happened. I don't want to see that happen, by the way. It was one stupid mistake. I think TNA handled the whole thing about as well as can be expected. I will say this. I was unpleasantly surprised by the number of people out there voicing their support for what Bully Ray said. Not that they support trashing gay people, but they say it's okay because he did so in the name of being a heel. They're crowing about, you know, political correctness and all that. Look, nobody hates the PC police more than I do, okay? when the Parents Television Council was all up in WWE's face about their product and they put pressure on sponsors to drop their advertising from SmackDown, I was pissed. As a fan, I was furious. I even wrote a letter to L. Brent Bozell, or L. Brent Bozo, as I used to call him, okay, the head of the PTC. I was so happy when WWE sued them, and they settled for millions out of court. That's what ended up happening. And they forced the Parents Television Council to publicly apologize to them. How sweet that was. So I'm with you. Okay, I think there are plenty of things people get bent out of shape about that are just ridiculous. You know, for example, calling people midgets as opposed to little people or dwarves is apparently frowned upon now. I mean, when did this start? I remember reading an article online last year. I think it was the Daily Mail that talked about some health watchdog group over in the UK that was encouraging people to not use the word obese in reference to people who were, in fact, obese, because they may be offended by that. Are you kidding me? I mean, you want to steer clear calling someone fat?
He's fat!
Thank you, Big Papa Pump. But really, I mean, isn't that the clinical term for someone who is grossly overweight? It's a medical term. It's just preposterous to me. Al Bundy has still one of my all-time favorite lines from a television sitcom on Married with Children when a rather large woman, shall we say, at the shoe store asks him if the dress she was wearing made her look fat. And he replied with, "It's not the dress that makes you look fat, it's the fat that makes you look fat." See, now that's a funny line. I have a sense of humor. But in this case, Bully was quite obviously using those words in a certain way. Don't try to convince yourself that he wasn't. Okay, he wasn't calling the guy a giant cigarette, for example. I would be really curious to know if people would still be okay with what Bully said if it was a black person he walked up to in the crowd and he used the N-word. Ask yourself that question. Imagine the shitstorm that would create for TNA. And rightfully so. You know, this whole let heels be heels argument, it doesn't apply here. It's weak. The same way that Bully can't use the F-word on TV. He has to say frickin'. Doesn't bother me. Does that make him any less of a heel? Of course not. Bully is one of the best heels I've ever seen. He doesn't have to say shit like that to be a great heel. I mean, it's not funny. It's not entertaining. It's just stupid. Let's talk about Impact Wrestling from Thursday night. Another fine edition of Impact this week. A little dull, but nothing really wrong with it. They had taped vignettes that played throughout the entire show with Bully Ray explaining how his master plan with Aces and Eights had unfolded over the last 9 months. I think they did something similar back when they had the Immortal faction. I think they did a DVD release explaining how Immortal came to be and how they all swerved everybody. I like this. You know, they tried their best to explain things in chronological order, tried to make sense out of everything that's happened over the last 9 months, which is impossible to do. But they tried. You know, they even addressed the thing I mentioned last week about Bully being attacked at the wedding. And as he explained it, he had to take one for the team. He referenced the movie Goodfellas as an example. He said he had a plan, which was to win the Bound for Glory series and go on to Bound for Glory and win the championship. His plans, unfortunately, were foiled by Jeff Hardy, and that's when he moved on to Plan B, which was to woo Brooke Hogan and gain Hulk's trust. And they talked about D'Lo being on the inside. That time he filled in for Al Snow as a gut check judge when Al got roofied, and he was the deciding vote in giving Wes Briscoe a contract. How Ken Anderson was first attacked by Aces and Eights, and nobody from TNA lifted a finger to help him, you know, because nobody likes him. And so that's why he joined the Brotherhood. And the one question I have is, you know, they explained D-Von being there, Briscoe, D-Lo, Anderson, all these people. What about Doc and Knox? Why are they there? How do they have contracts? You know, it's not like they were already with TNA. They still haven't answered that, but it's a minor quibble. I appreciate them laying all this out and trying to explain it. Aside from those segments with Bully and one very brief appearance by him later in the show, there really were no Aces and Eights on the show at all, which was a welcome change. It was nice to have a break from them for 1 week. Hulk Hogan made a four-way main event to determine the number one contender for Bully's title. Actually, Hogan was in the ring wanting to know if Jeff Hardy would be physically okay for his rematch, and it was Hardy who took it upon himself to suggest the four-way. Why he would voluntarily do this, I don't know. But Jeff has a history of making dumb decisions. It was only a few months ago, if you'll recall, where he volunteered to give Austin Aries and Bobby Roode a title shot in a three-way, even though he had already beaten them both in singles matches. So what? Not too bright. Speaking of Aries and Roode, they retained their tag team titles against Chavo and Hernandez. You know, Hernandez is by no means a great wrestler, but he's not bad for a big man. He's got some moves that are over with the crowd. He's got the pounce. He's got the big dive. WWE is so desperate to make that next big Hispanic star, and Alberto Del Rio just isn't doing it, as far as I'm concerned. I say if his contract is up soon, that is Hernandez, you make a play for him. I think he'd probably get over better in the role than Del Rio is. You know, Del Rio's a better wrestler, but he's a more natural heel. I still don't buy Alberto Del Rio as a babyface. You know, Hernandez, I could see them making him a real big star, plus he's got the size they like. The only problem is he's 40, and I really can't see them building everything around their next big Hispanic star when he's already 40 years old. Anyway, bad influence ran out at the finish. Daniel shoved Chavo off the top rope. This led to Aries rolling him up for the pin. So, yes, they are moving ahead with the Aries and Roode versus Daniels and Kazarian feud, the two best tag teams in wrestling. I can't wait. Can't wait for this feud. Kenny King retained his X Division title against Zema Ion and Sanjay Dutt, not to be confused with Sanjay Dutt, the Bollywood star who was sentenced this week to 5 years in an Indian prison. Yeah, they dust off Sanjay every now and then. He was a bit sloppy in this match, but you know, good action overall. Sanjay did a moonsault double stomp off the top rope onto Zema Ion, which is a move that I would never, ever, in a million years, agree to take. Especially in a match where the guy was fucking up moves left and right. If I'm Zema Ion, I'd have called an audible on that one. You know, give me a splash or something. I'm not taking that move. Kenny King came in. He gave Sanjay a blackbuster and got the three count. Wow. I actually wrote blackbuster here in my notes. It was a blockbuster. My bad. Actually, that's not a bad name for it. But that's not what he calls it. It is a blockbuster. By the way, there are new rules for the X Division. All matches will now be three ways, and there is a weight limit of 230 pounds. And all I want to know is whatever happened to the whole the X Division isn't about weight limits, it's about no limits. I remember that old catchphrase from the old TNA days. They said that from now on, the challenger who loses the fall will be out of the title picture. They did not bother explaining what that means exactly. If there is, you know, for example, a set period of time that has to go by before the person is eligible for another title shot, if the champion must first lose the title before that person can then challenge for it again, kind of like in dodgeball, where if you get eliminated and the person who eliminates you is taken out, you can go back in. No idea. But at least they're paying attention to the X Division, which is more than I can say for the last probably 6 to 9 months. That's a step in the right direction. Now they just need to bring in Rubik's. Remember Rubik's? The old jigsaw from the indies? They brought Rubik's in for like one or two matches. He got really over with the fans. And he was never heard from again. The only thing I could think of is maybe they offered him some sort of deal that would have precluded him from doing indies. At least doing indies like he's doing them now. And maybe they didn't offer him good money, so he turned them down. Otherwise, if Rubik's has been waiting for TNA to call him, and they haven't, that's just foolish. I don't know why they haven't brought him back. So maybe they can get him back in there and bring in somebody like Chuck Taylor from Chikara. Chuck Taylor scares little kids. What's not to like about the guy? Bring him on into the X Division. There were a few commercials throughout the show for Shop TNA, where they are having a spring clearance sale. The reason I bring this up is one of the items they're getting rid of are Jeff Jarrett signed guitars. So I decided to log on to the website, see how much they're going for. They were being sold for $349.99. Now, $79.99. I just want to know if they're gimmicked. See, that's how you know you're a wrestling fan, when you want to buy a guitar just so you can break it over somebody's head. Taryn Terrell came out to cut a promo, said she was ready to face the consequences after attacking Gail Kim last week. Obviously, as a referee, that sort of behavior is frowned upon. Gail Kim came out. She wanted Brooke Hogan to fire Taryn, which is exactly what she did. Mrs. Bully Ray. I don't think the marriage has been annulled yet, so she still is Mrs. Bully Ray. She came out. She said she was left with no choice but to terminate Taryn Terrell as a TNA official, but she was hiring her as a member of the Knockouts roster and said that she was free to get physical with anyone she wants, anytime, anywhere. Boy, that's kind of a vague statement, isn't it? If I'm any one of the male performers on the roster, I'm lined up by that curtain as soon as she comes walking to the pack. Taryn speared Kim. Bully Ray came out from the crowd at this point. He snuck up behind Brooke. She did some acting, tried to act all upset. She acted poorly. I will say that much. Bully showed off his wedding ring and said, "Till death do us part." What an evil man this person is. Matt Morgan beat Joseph Park with the carbon footprint. Mike Tenay has the absolute worst facial expressions of any announcer in the history of wrestling. I mean, whenever he tries to get serious, he has this look on his face like he's thinking, did I forget my car keys? You know, or he looks like he's constipated. Maybe both. Maybe he's sitting on the toilet bowl all constipated thinking, did I forget my car keys? Because if he did, I bet that's the look he would have on his face. He brought out AJ Styles looking all emo this week. Today's first question to him was, he asked him basically about drug and alcohol abuse. There's been rumors of drug and alcohol abuse. What do you have to say about that? And all I could think is, wow, right to Final Jeopardy. So, of course, Styles said nothing. Taz got up from the announce desk. He offered AJ a spot in the Aces and Eights. Dame Storm came out. He was none too happy that AJ blindsided him with a clothesline last week. He told Styles to take another shot at him, and instead AJ just walked off. And, you know, some people get upset when I talk about the Aces and Eights being a complete ripoff of the NWO, but now they're reenacting the Sting angle from 1997, so I dare those same people to tell me I'm wrong, okay? It's the same people running TNA that were running WCW. I don't have to say anything else. And I'm not even saying that's a bad thing. I actually kind of, I'm intrigued by this angle. I'm not bad-mouthing it. I'm not trashing it. I'm just saying it could not be any more obvious that they're ripping off these angles from 97. Jeff Hardy beat Samoa Joe, Kurt Angle, and Magnus in a four-way to become the number one contender to the TNA World title. Pretty good match here. Lots of dueling chants in Chicago for Angle and Joe, even when they were not in the ring. These are the two guys who did TNA's biggest buy rate of all time, so this should not be a surprise. I also like that they're keeping Magnus in the mix. I hope that continues. I was a little worried when they came back from the UK that he would fall back down the card, but the fact that he was at least in title contention here in this main event is a good sign. So that was Impact from Thursday. One other thing I want to mention here before we move on is TNA just taped a whole bunch of pay-per-views that are going to air at various points of the year into next year. Remember, the idea was that before they left the Impact Zone, they were going to tape a series of pay-per-views that will air on Friday nights at a reduced price, since they're only doing big pay-per-views now four times a year. One of the pay-per-views they taped was some sort of World Cup pay-per-view, I guess, that they did. It's going to air this November. And apparently, Ivelisse Velez was a member of Team Aces and Eights. Ivelisse was the one who was dumped from Gut Check a few weeks ago in favor of Lady Tapa. A poor decision on TNA's part. And I said last week on the Sound Off that I would love to see her become the first female face in the Aces and Eights. Perhaps this is now a sign of things to come. Either that or they just needed a woman to stick in there to balance things out, and she was the most obvious choice. So chances are that's probably what happened here, but I find it funny that, you know, I mentioned last week, Ivelisse, Aces and Eights, not a bad idea, and at least in November she will be on this pay-per-view. The bigger question, I think, does that mean Aces and Eights is still going to be around in November? You know, if TNA goes all the way with this whole thing and copies off the NWO was around for like 3 or 4 years. So we may be in for a lot more Aces and Eights yet to come. Want to give an update here on a fun story. That is DDP's fundraising campaign for one Scott Hall. Diamond Dallas Page set up an Indiegogo campaign a few weeks ago to help raise $80,000 for Scott Hall's hip replacement surgery and physical therapy. Scott's in pretty rough shape physically. He's starting to do the yoga and everything, but he really can't do much because his hip is all fucked up. So DDP put this thing together, and it was a rousing success. They reached their goal last Sunday with 20 days left to spare. And as of last check, they had raised over $86,000. And that was a couple of days ago that I checked, so by now it may well be close to $90,000 that they've raised. Scott Hall on Twitter said that his operation is now set for April 9th. He had to go to the cardiologist to get the okay because, again, he's had heart issues before. He's got a pacemaker in there and some other stuff. And he got the green light, and he is all set for surgery April 9th. And this comes after DDP hosted a similar campaign for Jake the Snake Roberts Jake was in desperate need of shoulder surgery that he could not afford. He had no insurance. And again, it was really preventing him from being able to do those workouts that are so crucial in his recovery. And so they set that campaign up, and they hoped to raise about $9,000 for him, and the fans ended up donating almost $30,000 to Jake's campaign. And Jake has since had the shoulder surgery. He is recovering. And I've said before that, you know, Jake comes off as being very sincere about wanting help and wanting to turn his life around. You know, if you've heard interviews with him before, even go back and watch the movie Beyond the Mat, as depressing as parts of that movie are. I felt kind of bad for the guy. I felt like he wants help but doesn't know how to go about it, or he's just too weak, you know? And Jake's lost a ton of weight since he started doing the exercises, and for the first time in forever, he's actually talking about the future. He actually sees a future for himself. And with Scott Hall, you ask yourself, you know, does the guy really want to change? And he's been to rehab about 11 times now on WWE's tab. Just one fuck up after another. You know, we've been down this road before. And to his credit on Twitter, and in the videos they record with him, he does seem sincere and he does seem humbled by everyone's gratitude. It's a really cool thing to see the marks, as he would call them. You know, that's what Scott Hall always called the fans. Still does. Calls them the marks. It's good to see them come through for him like this. You know, the marks came through to help Scott Hall. And I hope he appreciates that. I hope this is the wake-up call he needs to realize that there are people out there who, for one reason or another, they care about him. And because the fact is, Scott Hall is a guy who made millions of dollars over the course of his career. And he pissed it all away. And most people don't get a second chance, let alone a 10th, 11th, or 12th chance, like he's getting. Most people without medical insurance don't have the luxury of raising 80 grand online to pay their expenses like Scott Hall did. But if this is the turning point for him and he finally sees the light, then good for him. I'm happy. DDP, as far as I'm concerned, deserves a Hall of Fame induction for his work just with these two guys. Forget his wrestling career. I think DDP should be a candidate anyway for the Hall of Fame, given the success he had late in his career. I mean, he worked his ass off when everyone said, oh, you know, he's Eric Bischoff's buddy. That's the only reason he's getting a push. And yeah, that may have been true, but he worked his ass off, got himself over, he got his finish over, he won multiple world titles, and now, post-career, he's actually helping other ex-wrestlers turn their lives around. I mean, he's giving back. That's the sort of quality we should look for in a Hall of Fame candidate. I'd love to see Scott Hall get himself in shape, and then he and Jake stay on the straight and narrow, and then in a year, induct all three of them at the same time into the Hall of Fame at WrestleMania 30. That'd be a special moment, and it'd be a hell of a closing scene for the documentary that DDP is supposedly making about the resurrection of Jake Roberts and Scott Hall. I can't think of a better bookend to that documentary than the three of them up on stage at the Hall of Fame. All right, time for shout-outs and mailbag questions. You can email all of this stuff to me at thesolomonster@gmail.com. Michael Jordan writes in, no, not that one, I'd like for you to give a birthday shout-out to my good buddy Keelan. He's been a listener since episode 1 and is the person who introduced me to the Sound Off. He turns 24 on the 24th of March. He has a whole calendar year to make as big an achievement as Randy Orton made by becoming the youngest world heavyweight champion in WWE. If anybody can do it, it's him. Well, I presume by that means Keelan is a wrestler. I don't know. Michael did not indicate, but good luck if that is your goal. Ashley from Bristol, UK writes in, I was recently revisiting the excellent Hell in a Cell match from last year's WrestleMania and was reminded of the much-hyped moniker End of an Era. What did you take this phrase to mean at the time? And given that both men are booked in high-profile matches at this year's show, how do you feel about this title now? I took it to mean that we would never see any of the three men involved, that being Undertaker, Triple H, and Shawn Michaels, in a match together again. I never took it to mean that Undertaker or Triple H were retiring. So I'm fine with that. It was just a way to promote the match. Brian Collins has an opinion on Rock coming back and hogging the spotlight. First off, big fan, but let's be honest here. Do you really think that everybody who is a fan of Dwayne Johnson but not a fan of wrestling is just automatically going to become a diehard wrestling fan overnight? All The Rock is doing is drawing eyes to himself. These new fans, quote-unquote, are tuning in to see him, and when he leaves, they leave. They're not going to sit there and watch 3 hours of programming just because The Rock was on it for 10 minutes. Admittedly, out of the many new people tuning in, there are probably some who may actually stick around, but not so many to the point where Rock is breaking new ground. And sure, Rock is boosting sales on his product, but nobody else's. WWE has to look at the long-term effect of all this. Once he leaves, He will be taking the majority of the new fans with him and instead using all of his time to build up new talent they just wasted on Rock's ego for a cheap payoff. Fair point. That's Brian's opinion. I'm curious then, would you not use Rock at all? Or would you just use him to put over the younger talent like Dolph and Cody, maybe Barrett and Cesaro, perhaps The Shield? Because if your idea is to not use Rock at all, then you're out of your mind. You need to get your head examined. But if you're open to the idea of using him, then tell me, how would you use him? I want to hear your thoughts. Terry writes in, I've been a longtime fan of your podcast since episode 85. My question is regarding the Triple H Brock Lesnar match at WrestleMania. With talk of doing a Rock vs. Lesnar match at next year's show, who should really win this no-holds-barred match? Second question, is it true that what people say about Triple H, about his ego, and how he buried other wrestlers back in the day? Funny I should get this question this week. Yes, enough people who would know better than I have told stories about Triple H behind the scenes back in the day, and he would bury other people to benefit himself, much like he did with Booker T back in 03. That is true. He's not the only wrestler to ever do that, by the way, and now he's going to own the company, so I say bravo to him, you know. But back to your first question, who really should win at WrestleMania? As a self-contained story, Triple H probably should win simply because it completes the story. You know, bad guy breaks good guy's arm, then beats good guy at SummerSlam, breaks his arm again, good guy goes away for a while and teases retirement, then makes his big comeback and gets revenge by beating the bad guy. But contrary to what Vince McMahon might have you believe, you know, WWE is not a movie. This is a business. And when you look at what outcome gives you the best chance of doing big business in the future, it's Brock Lesnar winning. Especially if they want to do Lesnar versus Rock next year. That's the rumored main event for WrestleMania 30, which I'm sure is going to please a lot of people out there, especially all the Rock haters. But that's the you know, the match at this point. And again, I just did a column for Layfield Report about WrestleMania matches, you know, that we never got to see that were planned, but then plans changed. So who the hell knows a year from now what the main event is going to be? But if their idea is to do Lesnar versus Rock, and there's talk about maybe them doing a little bit of a tease on the Raw after WrestleMania this year, not flat out saying that it's going to be Rock versus Brock, but maybe teasing a Rock versus Brock match. You know, it's not like Brock is wrestling matches every week on TV. After a while, you kind of get numb to it when people win, people lose. But if they're wrestling every week at all, it's kind of just one big blur. It almost doesn't even matter. But Brock is only going to wrestle once, maybe twice, would be my guess, before next year's WrestleMania. People are going to know, hey, this guy lost to Triple H last year. And that's not how you book Lesnar as a monster, by having him lose to someone almost 10 years older who's already mostly retired anyway. Triple H has nothing to gain by winning that match. Nothing. Nada. Zip. Zero. Zilch. He's already a made man. So therefore, Brock Lesnar should win the match. Simple as that. That's my final answer. David LaRue from Azle, Texas writes in, listener since episode 228. I painfully watched Raw 2 weeks ago, but did not see this past week's show. Now that Punk has the urn, will it have magical powers to weaken the Undertaker and help Punk break the streak? Please tell me creative isn't this stupid to go with the urn having special powers. No special powers. It's what it represents to the Undertaker. That's what used to make him sit up back in the day. The urn has sentimental value to the Undertaker now that Paul Bearer has died and he wants it back. That's the story they're telling. If laser beams start shooting out of the urn, then that's a different story. Steve Wysocki, I am from Indiana, but currently in New York getting my master's degree. I have been listening to the Sound Off since somewhere between episode 30 and 35, as well as the old Monday Night Raw recap shows with you and Noah Mark. I am looking forward to the next episode over the weekend as I relax from my last week of midterms as a grad student. Can I please get a shout-out for my 24th birthday this Sunday, the 24th? Happy birthday, Steve, and good luck with that. My question for you has to do with debuting groups and factions in wrestling. When The Shield debuted, everyone was debating who they were working for. The same thing when Nexus debuted years ago. I feel that debuting groups automatically brings up the whole question of who do they work for? Who is their leader? I feel they don't always need a veteran wrestler being their leader and could just be out for themselves. Do you think that people overanalyze the whole who do they work for angle and should not get disappointed when no greater leader is revealed? Well, wrestling fans overanalyzing something? I don't believe you. The hell you say. Actually, I overanalyze things on this show every week, I admit it, but if I didn't, the show would be about 12 minutes long. But of course they do. everybody overanalyzes everything. I mean, I agree. You don't always need to have somebody from the current roster revealed as the leader or the benefactor, as it were. I mean, wasn't there talk of Nexus having a benefactor? I seem to recall Wade Barrett talking about how they answered to a higher power or something, but nothing ever came from it. You know, it's just like David Otunga never told us why Nexus attacked The Undertaker and buried him alive. I've seen people talking about how maybe Randy Orton will go heel, which I think he might. I think there's a very good chance Orton goes heel at WrestleMania. But talking about Orton and maybe as a leader for the Shield, you know, yeah, because his leadership skills and legacy were so successful. I've heard Chris Jericho's name mentioned. You know what? I don't want to see that. If they want to add a fourth member of the Shield at some point, maybe. And it should be somebody from NXT, in my opinion, not somebody currently on TV. But they don't need a leader. They don't need a greater power. My John Cena idea from earlier that I mentioned, I think could work, but I wouldn't push for it. I'm not saying I would. The first thing I would do if I worked for WWE is push to have John Cena as the leader of the Shield. They don't need a leader. This comes from Fred. Hey there, Salamaster. I've been listening to The Sound Off religiously since episode 199, which was your year in review show for 2011. And I have not missed a show since, but this is my first time mailing in a question. On the most recent episode of The Sound Off, you said that it takes a lot to offend you in regards to professional wrestling segments. Oh, boy. Your timing with this question is impeccable, let me tell you. This made me wonder which wrestling segments from any company have offended you. So that comes from Fred. It does take a lot to offend me. Even the Bully Ray stuff I just talked about earlier, I wasn't personally offended by it. I just thought it was ignorant and childish and has no place in wrestling. The Eddies in Hell thing with Orton and Mysterio from SmackDown back in 06, that was pretty low. The E. Stan Kroenke impersonator was offensively stupid to have to sit through as a viewer, so it offended me in that respect. You know, Cheatham the Midget blowing up Sting and Davey Boy Smith's boat in WCW was the seventh level of hell type stupid. Even dumber, by the way, was how much money they spent to make that skit. You wouldn't believe it even if I told you. I don't know. I mean, there's probably other stuff. Nothing really jumps out at me right now. Again, not a lot offends me. Patrick W. Phillips has a letter for us. With the passing of Paul Bearer, I've been reliving some of his moments in WWE through YouTube. This has naturally also led me to some videos with the Brothers of Destruction. One particular video I stumbled upon was one of Kane's World Heavyweight Championship monologues from 2010. Oh, God. Not the Big Red Vagina monologues. Don't remind me. He says, I remember my friend and I used to refer to them as the Dear Diary monologues because of how long they were, the melodramatic content and music added for effect. After rewatching the promo, I found that I still pretty much have the same opinion, but this leads to my question. What do you think of this particular style of promo? Also, why does it seem this kind of promo is rarely used? Sure, the music-aided promo might be hokey, but it's still slightly better than the comedy we're subjected to every week. Well, I'd say it's rarely used for that reason. It's too hokey. It sucks. If it takes me out of the moment when you hear that music. You know, Kane was very good in his delivery. He did a hell of a job memorizing some really, really long lines. But the stuff they scripted for him, he sounded like Shakespeare. And I'm sorry, that just doesn't work on a wrestling show. When I watch a wrestling promo, especially one with the world champion, one that I'm supposed to at least somewhat take seriously, as ridiculous as the Kane backstory may be. And again, that stuff with The Undertaker being in a vegetative state was a bit hard to digest. It just takes me out of the moment. You know, I can't take it seriously. It screams, you're watching a TV show, and not a very good one. Damian Sandow can go out there, he can be over the top and funny, that's fine, that's his role, that's his character, but I don't generally like these types of promos at all, and personally, I'm happy they got rid of them. I didn't even think of it until you just brought it up, the corny promos with the music in the background. Thank God they got rid of those promos. They were just a laughingstock. Lastly here, Cody has been listening to The Sound Off since episode 200. Says, I was just wondering, if they turn Randy Orton heel, should WWE restart the John Cena-Randy Orton rivalry? No, 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 no. No, that's my answer. And that's the Sound Off mailbag for this week. I got a lot more questions, and I apologize if I could not get to your shout-outs, but we must end this week. You can email me your questions and comments, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Whatever I didn't get to, I promise I will try to get to next week. So you can email me there. Also, follow me on Twitter. @Solomonster is my handle, and that's going to be very important as we get closer to WrestleMania, because we're going to be doing a whole ton of events And I'll be, you know, live blogging from those events and whatnot. And so you'll want to be following me on there, at Solomonster. You could also friend me on Facebook, facebook.com/TheSolomonster. You have to friend me for access. I will approve you. I just put up some more photos in my secret photos or secret files, I guess, whatever I call it. It's a special photo library on Facebook, exclusively on Facebook. Posted a whole bunch of photos from the WWF Fan Fest, the very first Fan Fest they ever did at Madison Square Garden back in 1994. It was part of WrestleMania 10 weekend. I was there as a young fan, and somebody had brought something up. I forgot what triggered it off, but I went back, and I actually found more photos and scanned them in, and I put them up there, and it's kind of fun, actually, to look back on that. So if you want to check those photos out, the only way to do it is on Facebook. Plus, you can be part of our weekly Raw discussion thread, which is always very active and lively. And some people on Facebook have even made other wrestling friends just by being part of that whole Raw debate each and every Monday. So friend me on there. Also, you can subscribe to The Sound Off on iTunes. Type in Solomonster Sounds Off, and you can subscribe automatically. Episodes will be downloaded for you whenever a new show goes up. And makes life a lot easier. Also, leave me some feedback in iTunes if you would be so kind. I very much appreciate that. And I think that pretty much covers all the important stuff for this week. I'm working on a few changes here to certain things. I don't really want to get into it. I'm hoping to get that done this week. And so there may be some fun things to talk about next weekend. So anyway, that's it for this week. Episode 267 will be the final normal show, for lack of a better word, before WrestleMania weekend is upon us. So next week, I will have some all the information, really, on all the events that we're going to be attending. It's crazy, all the events that we're going to be going to. So we'll talk about that. We are going to be doing another roundtable sound-off this year like we did last year. No interviews, just the three of us. We'll talk about WrestleMania. We'll give our predictions. We'll talk about all the events up to that point that we have attended. It's a lot of fun to get together with Noah Mark and Brian Blade. I thank them for being part of it. I'm looking forward to that. We'll probably be doing that show the Friday before WrestleMania. That's what it looks like right now. And that's when we'll do predictions. But I'll have more on that next week. So until then, be well, stay safe, have a great week, and we will see you right back here for episode 267 next week here on SEScoops.com. Take care, guys.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solomonster Sounds Off on SEScoops.com.